MGO Podcast 10.17. You're probably already pretty jazzed to listen to a podcast about the last two basketball games, but this one's extra French. So we have a photographer. His name is Mark Greger, and he's a very, very good photographer. We love him dearly. And one of the reasons we love him dearly is he is beyond French.
Beyond?
He is beyond French. He's very, very French.
So he actually has sung the Marseillaise in our Slack chat before.
That's true. He has. And so he's on our Slack chat during this game, and he says, called me crazy, but it is so intense that it smelt like burned tires, parentheses, squid mark. On the floor right now. I am not minding at all. So many squid mark on the ground right now. I mean, the shoes leave marks, intense marks on the floor. And of course, Abraham gave him a little bit of English language. It's a skid mark, not a squid mark. But this was the squid mark game for Brandon Johns. Got his squid marks all over the place.
Squib marks?
Squib. Squid.
Squib. Squid.
With a D.
Squib.
With a D. Okay. With a D. With a D. Yeah. With tentacles. Got his tentacles into business.
So tentacle marks.
It's a family podcast. Hey.
There's a little Brandon John suckers all over the court.
It's a family podcast. People, calm down.
What Poole did to McBob was not a family affair.
What Poole did to a couple of people. But so we should give the score and tell people who we are. I'm Brian Cook. This is the MGO Podcast.
We're still back to telling people who we are. Dude,
that's Seth.
Do people know...
You're Dave.
I understand why they wouldn't know who I am.
If you're not listening, if you were not expecting to listen to MGO Blog, you're on the wrong podcast.
I like the fact that I'm not like the guy who sounds like a cynical dick anymore. That's him.
Me? I think somebody at the beginning of the year said that I was very testy or spiky or something. I am.
Yes, it's.
But you've also called me the nicest person in the world.
I know, and then you get on this podcast, and it's like, what is going on with Dave?
Is this just dark, David?
At one point in our friendship, you told me that I was going to break bad.
Yes, and you obviously have by being put on a podcast, which is a weird way to break bad. But there you go. Anyway, Indiana less points, Michigan more points. What was the score?
I don't know. I had our sponsors up for some reason.
Why don't you do that, and I'll look up the score.
Fine. Someone look up the score.
It was 74-63.
I'm the cynical person.
It was 74-63.
Put the sponsors back up.
We're doing it.
We would like to thank our sponsors, which are, of course, Underground Printing, the Bow Store, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshare Lending, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Human Element, Michigan Law Grad, and Lantana Hummus. Now, back to the sniping and not talking about a very fun basketball game.
74-63, Michigan.
74-63. This is a weird one.
Which was just below the KenPom line?
It was above. It was 8.
Michigan was it 8? Okay, yeah. I was thinking it was 12. That was the other one. Okay.
No, that was... It was Penn State was 11. This was 8. But this is a weird game, so the lineup chart on the previews is 9 deep. And Rob Finnessy, their starting point guard, was out, so he wasn't on the line chart. And there was a guy who played 10 minutes for Indiana who I had no idea who he was because he wasn't on... The depth chart.
I don't have enough to fit him onto that thing.
So Deron Davis also does not play?
Clifton Moore.
So when, Juwan Morgan gets 2 fouls pretty quick in the first half, this guy comes off the bench, and I'm like, I have no idea who this is. And on Michigan's part, John Tedeschi missed big chunks of this game with foul trouble. Austin Davis picks up 4 fouls in 4 minutes.
Or less.
Isaiah Livers misses this game. And so who do you turn to? You turn to Brandon Johns. And Brandon Johns gets 8 points, gets 8 rebounds. And perhaps most impressively, they tried to work it down in the post to Juwan Morgan. He blocks that guy. And
at a crucial point in the game when Michigan was in the lead, but was...
Could have teetered the wrong way. Yeah.
Right, because they had to take Teskey off because he got his 4th. And if he gets an and-1 there or something like that, all of a sudden the game is pretty tight.
Yeah.
But he stuffed him.
And it was interesting because I was alternately kind of frustrated with Michigan's post defense. Morgan puts up 25 points. But if you go and you look at his actual production, you know, it's 25 points on 25 shot equivalents. I'm pretty sure he had two and ones.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so he has six free throws, he has 22 shots. And then he has zero assists and three turnovers for an O rating of, Seth?
98.
Which
is a win.
That's such a win. That's a guy who is shooting 74% coming into this game. And, you know, he had a couple of blips here and there against, like, you know, Mike Watkins and Penn State. But even against the good teams Indiana was playing, he was killing it. He was 8 of 8 from the floor against Butler. Like, he annihilated that team. And, you know, even though he was kind of in and out of the lineup, he got his points, but he was completely unable to be efficient in any way whatsoever.
And using a ton of their possessions.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Well, I mean, they don't have a lot of options, especially without their starting point guard.
No.
Yeah, but he was at 58 in this one.
He had 58% usage?
Yes.
Are you serious?
I just loaded the KenPom page. It just popped up.
I mean, that makes sense because you're looking down team's shot chart or the shot attempts and it's 22, 4, 9, 5, 11, 1, 2, 0. I mean, it's basically two and a half guys, maybe three guys.
I mean,
a lot of it was like trying to put it back and then it fall down. He got his rebound and then put...
Carson Edwards had 50% on us earlier this year, and I was like, I've never seen that before.
Well, now you've seen it twice.
And now I've seen a 58.
From the same state.
Good God. But, so he's... half of their offense, their other half of the offense is Romeo Langford. Langford does a little bit better. He's, what is it?
Yeah, 135 O rating. He's 4 and 9 from 2, 1 and 2 from 3.
Yeah. So he hits a 3. That's kind of like a...
He had a lot of free throws.
Yeah, and there was that kind of period in the second half where Michigan messed up some rotations.
Yeah.
So, like, that's not Michigan being bad at defense. It's like they changed something and then they blew it a couple times and those are two of his buckets.
It's Brad Hawkins falling down the second half.
Why? See, I told you.
Because it was a good analogy.
No, it's not a good analogy.
I thought it was.
Because he didn't have a wrong call. You were saying that he fell down, which is a different thing.
Okay.
Sorry about that, but there was a field goal that didn't go quite as Chicago planned.
Yeah, doink, doink.
The boars.
But you said that they won because he hit all the...
Well, that's my rule in, like, fantasy football, like, more than fantasy football, like, my fantasy world of football, where you get 1 point for hitting either post or the crossbar. So then they would have gotten 2 points and won the game. And how amazing would that have been?
4 points?
No, it's two.
Oh.
And if you get... Well, you get four if you doink it in. So it's just... fires it up.
NBC is now playing a replay of
all the times he's hit the post.
All the misses against the Lions, especially.
Anyway, let's move on and talk about the basketball game that people listening to this podcast care about.
So we've talked a little bit about Brandon Johns. Are we to the point of where we want him in the game ahead of Austin Davis?
Yeah.
That's clear.
I mean, so maybe, probably. The one thing that kind of gives me pause is that you can tell that when Davis is out there, he knows where he's supposed to be in the offense a lot more. So there were a number of possessions where Johns is just kind of standing around in that kind of mid-post area. He's not screening. He's not posting. He's not really doing anything. And there were a number of Michigan possessions that were rescued by, you know, Iggy late or Matthews late or especially Xavier late. And the offense just kind of bogs in some ways.
Because
he's a guy still reading the script when he's out there. He doesn't, like...
Right, and, I mean, he had his moments. Like, he was able to roll the basket a couple times, and Simpson found him for dunks. But you can tell what's kind of holding him back, and it's the fact that, you know, he wasn't a center in high school. He's not... Well, he was his high school center, but it doesn't really... So he's coming in expecting to play the four. They're putting him at the five. And it's just a lot of intricate stuff to get your head around. You know, Mitch McGarry doesn't play very much his first year. Jordan Morgan redshirts.
Right.
Like, there's... Point guard and center in Michigan's offense are just hard to get your head around.
They're like offensive linemen.
On the other hand, you can see what's coming.
Yeah, man, that dunk where he took off from kind of just inside the free throw
line. 12 feet, maybe?
Like, he wasn't on the free throw line. He was, like, a step inside of it. And I was like, that's... oh. I mean, we saw that in his high school film. He was clearly a very an above-the-rim player who was the best athlete Michigan was bringing in this class. But, you know, seeing that translate against high school folks and seeing it translate against Indiana is kind of a different deal.
Yeah, so, especially when we really haven't seen him on the floor much at all.
And he can shoot. Like, he was a frequent three-point shooter in high school. He should be at least in that 30% range. So, like, once he kind of settles in, but, you know, that's kind of talking about 2 years down the road because you're going to have Teske for the next year and a half.
Yeah, I think that there is a version of Johns that we haven't seen yet that we could have for the end of this season.
Sure. Like, I mean, if he can...
If the game slows down for him.
Right. If he can just get more comfortable out there, kind of know what motions he's supposed to take in the offense, then clearly he's a superior player to Austin Davis.
Because what you said about Davis was that he knows where he's supposed to be. So he's run through this offense for multiple seasons and has had a lot of reps. Yeah. And so just kind of knows. He just maybe isn't quite physically capable of the things, obviously, that Teske and even then Johns seems like he is.
Yeah, and you can see it with, like, Davis is running out to the three-point line to set a screen, and nobody has to wave at him, right? Like, people are waving at Johns. So that, I mean, that's the one thing that is holding him back now, but, like, yeah, I think that is a really good development for Michigan, and hopefully he can find some minutes, because Davis is, you know, he's going to foul out in 5 minutes against Ethan Happ, and that's completely fine. That's completely fine.
Well, there's a couple teams where he fits in perfectly to the...
Right, yeah. So he's a guy who will be an option for Michigan. He did have a bucket in this game. He didn't play terrible defense. I mean,
he had a couple of stops, I think, he forced a couple missed layups.
He did force a couple of Morgan's misses, and then it's just that the four fouls were...
Well, he just gets beat to spots, and I don't know, his body control seems a little...
Well, yeah, and Juwan Morgan is a really good player.
Right.
So, like, he was making some stuff, like the one where Teske put him underneath the backboard, and he was still like, whoops!
Came out, and, yeah.
That's going in. I was like, come on! So, I mean, he's shooting 74% for a reason, right?
Yeah.
So, for Michigan to be able to do what they did against him is, you know, brings kind of back that this is an elite defense without an elite shot blocking game, which is nice. What was their points per possession in this one?
Just over one, 1.07.
Indiana?
Indiana was at 1.07, yeah.
Really?
Yep. Huh. Justin Smith was actually their top O rating, although small usage. But
they only had 7 turnovers. That was kind of the one thing.
And they had a lot early.
Yeah, and they were getting on the boards, too.
Yeah, that's okay. So
they turned the ball over a lot early. Matthews jumped a few passes and had a few breakaway or two, and that kind of ignited Michigan's early offensive run.
So Indiana did a really good job of getting more shots up than a lot of teams will, because they did a really good job on the offensive boards and they didn't turn the ball over in that. So Michigan's initial shot defense was very good, but there were too many shots, and that's how they crept over a point per possession.
Darn.
Well, after the Penn State game where they're at like 0.7, this defensive performance felt kind of like that, but those except for the second chance points, really, and the fact that they didn't turn them over.
And I think I could only think of one shot that Indiana took that I was like, oh, that's a good shot that's going in and didn't go in. So, like, I don't think they were, like, extremely lucky in their shots, but, like, they were taking bad shots a lot of times and having them – they were taking shots that I would let them take.
Yeah.
And you were saying that early in the game. Yeah, they hit a couple, like,
right,
non-scores.
Right, you know, it's like, it's okay. All right, if that guy's going to hit that shot, that's fine.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, they have that Al Durham kid, and he's a pretty good player. He's not going to create a ton of shots, but he's a good shooter. So he's a guy who will get his points here and there.
So we've talked about Johns, but part of the reason we've talked about Johns is because there was no Isaiah Livers.
Yep.
And we can talk a little bit about that maybe in the Penn State game when we get to that too, but how does his injury kind of, like, affect Michigan going forward against teams? Like, is this game different with him, or did they kind of cover up what he wouldn't have done?
I mean, I think the offense flows a little bit better when Teske goes out of the game, because you don't need to put Davis in, because you don't have...
Because Livers is big enough for...
Right, and then you have a guy who can space the floor really well at that 5 spot. And it's not like Indiana really defended the hoop very well in this game, but he's a veteran now, he's a sophomore, and he's going to... No,
basically a veteran under Beilein.
I mean, yeah, and in this day and age of college basketball, especially when John Beilein is developing his guys too fast.
Yeah.
Speaking of developing his guys too fast, Jordan Poole.
The number of people tweeting at Ace, where are your pants, is...
It's increased exponentially. I'm sure his mentions are just like, where are your pants, Ace? Ace pants. Smelling salts. Ace.
I think I'm sure he prefers that more than the nipples thing.
Yeah, probably. But he, that drive right towards the end of the game where he changed directions twice.
Yeah.
I mean, he had a spin move and then a reverse. He had like, he had one very terrible heat check, and then the rest of it was just like, God damn.
Yeah, I mean, there's
I couple, didn't mind that heat check either. That was just a long three.
Heat check.
If that one goes in, Pricer was about to lose it.
In warm-ups, he's taken like warm-up shots halfway to half court. He's taken them from like 30 feet. And so like, and it's a low sample size right now, but I was passing around some stats that some NBA guys had about NBA 3 range. And he was at like 60% a couple weeks ago, and I don't think that percentage has gone down particularly far. So, yeah, he's got range.
So he didn't start the season super well and then kind of caught on a few weeks in, and then heated up. And now he's starting to do even more exponential things. And today he was 6 of 7 on twos. So he's getting not only to the basket a few times, because he had a couple nice moves getting to the rim, but he also had that ankle breaker where he hit that sort of step back shot.
Yeah. Well,
he also had another where he left off sort of the Dirk style one footer for his like first bucket. And it's kind of like we're dipping into, I wrote on the board when we're taking our notes here that like it's almost like he's dipping into like the next level, next year stuff that we're kind of hoping maybe doesn't quite fully come out yet this year.
Yeah, I'd like to get one of Iggy or Poole back. That's kind of my hope.
Yeah.
Kind of like
replacing three starters after last year there's a bit of an adjustment. Thankfully, it's a couple players who look like they're ready for breakouts. Yeah. But doing it 2 years in a row, you just have to start recruiting higher and higher and higher and higher to fill that.
Yeah, and hopefully some people are paying attention. We'll see. I was reading Twitter during the game, and Sam Vecenie, who's the Athletics NBA draft guy, mentioned that Poole would be on the board in a real way in his next update. And I was like, no, please stop.
Yeah.
Too much. But I guess on the bright side, Brezdeikis has come back to earth a tiny bit. And, you know.
Well, I was thinking a little bit about that during the game today. We haven't seen a whole lot of Iggy. But then I started looking at everybody else, and I was like, but Poole's kind of tearing it up. He had like 12 points right away. Yeah. Matthews had 12 points like 10 minutes into the game.
Yeah, well, he had a couple of breakaway dunks, and he hit a couple of open threes.
And he beat a guy on a drive or got a rebound, and the other guy was out of position and just had another dunk. And
What's Matthews on the season from three? Is he up to like a decent number yet?
He's at 35.
And so that means something. Like for him to be able to go from a 30% three-point shooter to a 35% three-point shooter, we're seeing that kind of uptick in his free throw rate, where he's not a great free throw shooter, but he's separated himself from Xavier, right? It's fair to say.
I was actually happy one time. I can't remember which game it was now, but I was actually happy seeing him take the free throws one time instead of Xavier.
Well, it seems like if he gets an open rhythm three, that's now like not like an okay shot. It's a legitimately good shot, and we've seen enough of it where it's like, okay, I think he's made progress.
Well, and he trusts it now. I think there was a period in his game where he just had that hesitation when he got that ball,
a little hitch. Yeah.
Yeah. And now he'll just go up with it, and it's smooth.
And like he goes left on Langford to get Langford second really early in the game, and that's something that, like, I think it's going to be a little bit like GR3 for him in the NBA. Where like GR3 enters the NBA and he can't really shoot threes, and it's a problem. But over 3 or 4 years, by the time he's 28, he's like, oh, I'm a legitimate NBA rotation player. And I think that's going to be Matthew's path as well, where it's just going to take him a little bit longer, but he'll get there. And then the defense he had on Langford was really, really good, except for those kind of breakdowns that were maybe his fault, maybe not his fault. And when it was actually like, I am defending this guy going to the hoop, Langford really couldn't get much on him.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought at some points he was just picking away at it, and he got a couple turnovers out of that, and he also got a couple times.
He stole the ball on the first possession.
Yeah.
From Langford.
And when he stole it, it was always on the top, and he could go down and dunk it too. So like,
But the stuff Langford was able to get was not like one-on-one straight line drives against Matthews.
No.
And like what he was able to do was, you know, take advantage of a couple of open looks because he's an 18% three-point shooter, and then take advantage of a couple of Michigan miscues, but like when Matthews was locked in on Langford, he won that battle straight up. And that's, I mean, 26 NBA scouts at this game, and that's what he had to do to be like, yes, I'm an NBA player because I can go do this.
Yeah.
Because Langford, like Morgan, elite two-point shooter with like 64% coming in this game, and even when he gets into like other two jumpers, he's at 51%, which is insane. And he wasn't able to get any good shots against Matthews because Matthews has the length and athleticism to contest him, which very few people in college do.
Right.
And very few people in Michigan's ever had. Like, there's guys who come through college and they stay for a year and they go on to the NBA who have that kind of skill and that kind of size.
Maybe Bernard Robinson.
Yeah, I mean, I remember watching him play. I don't remember watching his lockdown defense. I mean, it could have been there, but I was also 18.
A long and rangy guy with a lot of athleticism who had a cup of coffee in the NBA, and it wasn't because of his offense.
Well, he also played under Tommy Amaker.
Yeah, that's true. God. So, I mean, this is a pretty solid win over a ranked team where Michigan had to do some rotations, and IU also had some issues with their health. But, you know, I always kind of go into these games, and there's points at which, like, I just feel like, oh, God, it's all going to fall apart. Like,
Did you get to that point today?
No, a little. No, I didn't get to that point, but I was like, like, I kind of keep waiting for this team to not be one of the best teams in the country. Like, I'm just waiting for, like, the other shoe to drop.
We're running out of time for that.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, well, they're just pretty good. They're just kind of like a regular Beeline team where they could be, like, a 3-seed or a 2-seed. And, like, the 1-seed Michigan just, it doesn't feel right to me. And so every time it's like, oh, they got within 9 points, I'm like, here it comes. And then it never comes.
Well, they're comparing the team on the broadcast. I don't know if you guys were at the game, but, like, on the broadcast, they're comparing the team again and again to the 2013 team. And I'm like, these guys went to the national championship last year as well. This is not just a... This team has probably been better all along than we gave it credit for.
Well, last year's team didn't really click until about halfway through the season, and then you get, you know, the most important parts of that defense back, and then you get Poole being Poole, and you have Iggy being...
Super freshman.
Yeah, super fresh, and then that kind of patches those holes. So the one thing that did get to me in this game is the Teske auto bench in the second half, where he's out like...
Well,
from the...
it was like 17 minutes, and he picked up his third... 17 or 16 minutes, and he picked up his third. So
right out of the half, he got two quick fouls, I think. And then
he's on the bench for like 6 minutes.
I think
they lose 6 points in those 6 minutes.
Which is not a lot without
Teske. I know,
Teske.
But like, you know, Teske is a guy who I trust enough to be out there, especially because like there's going to be minutes where he can sit out because they're going to have to take Morgan out at some point. So, I mean... It's just
it was very early to see a Beeline player pick up his third.
Well, they had a third from Iggy as well, so both
later.
Those guys were on the bench. And when both those guys were on the bench, and Johns was out there not really knowing what to do, and you've got Eli Brooks, and Langford is checking Eli Brooks. So Brooks can't do anything against that because he's, you know, a half foot taller and just as athletic. Well, just as quick.
Yeah.
So, like, he's just sitting in the corner, and he's not going to create anything. And it's like, all right, well, I just felt like if Michigan was going to lose this game, it would have been getting exposed in that kind of period.
That was the genre, somewhere between about 15 minutes and 11 minutes, where I was like, I don't know how we're going to get to, like, the under 8 or the under 5.
Yeah.
That was the part where I'm like, hopefully they just missed shots, because at that point they started feeding Morgan like every time down the floor, and he was drawing a Davis foul, or he was getting an easy layup, and it was like...
And that's when the Johns block occurred, where it was just like, okay, kind of in that area.
Right, it was like, kind of like, oh, okay, that's like a... saved us like 40 seconds almost.
Yeah. So it's not anything that is ever going to change. John Beeline is always going to be very strict about his auto benching, and sometimes it comes up and it's annoying, but it hasn't bit Michigan this year, and hasn't even really dented this game, which was a solid, 11-point win?
11 points.
Yeah, I think that it wasn't – I understand your frustration, but from my perspective, I thought they were up by double digits or thereabout, and so I think that Beeline thought that he had some wiggle room. Mm. And you remember the UConn game a few years ago in the Bahamas when Karis LeVert, I guess we have a lot of LeVerts.
I've done that.
Yeah, Karis LeVert's the only guy keeping Michigan around in that game, and then he picks up his second foul with like 10 minutes to go. And then he gets auto-benched, and Michigan kind of goes down by like 15, 18 points. And that was one where you're like, okay, we're basically hanging almost by a thread, the one guy whose offense is keeping us in this game is now on the bench. Now what? That's a problem. This was a little more
like...
Yeah,
I mean, Indiana had the same issue in the first half where, like, their stars go out and Michigan's, like, up 15 or something. And they're like, all right, we got to pull the trigger on this.
Yeah.
And they got away with it. And I just kind of feel like that's going to be something that you can do. I mean, maybe... I don't know. I feel like sometimes I overblow it.
But then in that situation, like, they bring in Teske and he gets his fourth with, like, eight minutes.
I mean,
you did not think it was a foul. I remember clearly.
I mean,
explosion.
Yeah. So we're doing this one like right after. So like I haven't had an opportunity to go look at it.
Yeah.
But that looked like all ball to me when they put it on the Chrysler board.
Yeah.
Well, they on the broadcast they were even the announcers were like, that wasn't a foul.
And you put
John Beilein disagrees, I think, is how they presented it. But.
You put a fourth on Teske on that business.
With 8 minutes left in the game.
So, I mean, yeah, I guess these yutzes are always going to be yutzes, but I don't think you can plan for that. It is my thing is, like, every minute in the game is equally as valuable as any other minute. So, like...
My only disagreement to that is if it's close enough and it goes to overtime, then you have 5 more minutes.
I mean, that's true, but it wasn't really that close. That was a pretty distant possibility. And then when he went out... After picking up his fourth, Johns was playing pretty
well.
That's
when Johns was playing, looking good. He had another dunk, a couple of rebounds.
You never really know what's going to happen with those guys, but it kind of felt like mid to early second half that they were really missing Teske.
I mean, Beilein has been asked about it before, and he said it's not a hard and fast rule, but it's kind of a
Brian disagrees.
He said it's a program thing, though. Right, that, like, guys know that they're going to get a chance to play.
Yeah, guys know that they're going to get
There's a B in here.
Michigan's 2 foul participation on KenPom is 1.4%. So that means when a guy...
I'm going to call Ken and ask him to stop cracking the stat because
when a guy... Gets his second foul in the first half against Michigan. He plays 1.4% of the minutes after that. That is 344th in the country, but it's not a hard and fast rule.
Between December and April, these are about 95% of Brian's contributions to Slack. Is just copying and pasting this stuff.
I get it. If you need something to complain about John Beilein, and we're running out of options.
All right, fine. We're moving on.
Okay.
The last thing we want to say is, like, what do you think Xavier Simpson's percentage on crazy skyhooks is?
Oh, man.
In this one?
He missed 2 in this one. Yeah. But, like, it seems like he hit 3.
Yeah, at least 2 or 3.
He definitely hit 3, because I remember 2 went off the backboard and 1 went straight in. And I think he was, like, 2 or 3 against Penn State. I feel like he's shooting, like, 66% on absurd Kareem Abdul-Jabbar skyhooks.
I mean, KenPom has a stat for everything, but I don't know if it has a sky hook conversion rate.
Because nobody's brought that out for you. I wonder if like opponents are starting to pull out the old Kareem Abdul-Jabbar like film. You're like, how did they defend this?
They mostly just watched.
They didn't. But he also released from about multiple feet above where anyone's hands or heads were.
I'm just saying, when he shoots those, they don't look defendable. Like, you're covering his...
Well, no.
You're covering the inside arm, and all of a sudden...
And now you have one of the shortest players in college basketball taking those and is converting.
Well, he had a late clock one of those where he's just like, all right, this is what I'm going to. I'm like,
we've got nothing else.
Well, I like that better than Charles Matthews trying to do a pull-up.
They're like putting him in the left corner specifically so he can get to that shot. It's incredibly bizarre.
Where did this come from?
Well, I mean, he can't shoot, so what is he going to do?
Oh, I understand, but like you watch, I mean, I don't know if you watched Steve Nash in his career, but he came up with a million different shots. He never went to the hook shot per se, but this is just, I would have never, or even Spike had a number of those,
yeah,
with
Spike,
with his donuts in the lane type stuff.
I mean, I wrote an article about Spike, about how, like, this was when...
His old man YMCA game?
Yeah, yeah.
And but Z's like... All right, I guess I'm going full Kareem.
What happened there, I'm pretty sure. This is just a guess.
Okay.
But in the summer, he goes home, and he starts hanging out with his dad. And his dad's a basketball coach.
Sure.
He's coached him all his life. And it's like, all right, what are we going to do? And so they went back in the backyard, and they played a horse for like 3 straight months. And this was the best thing they came up with. It's pretty good.
His dad just stood next to him, put his arms all over him, and is like, now take a shot. Nope, that didn't work. Now we're going to take a different kind of shot. Okay, and then he just throws the ball like a hook shot, and it goes in. We might have something.
Like,
here.
There's definitely like a sports movie montage that happened over the summer that led to the.
This is his 30 for 30.
I think you put up on the board Zareem.
Zareem.
Zareem. Zareem.
Well, there's like there's different things between is he Z, is he X, and I don't know.
He's still X because Beeline calls him X, and like his teammates call him X, so he's still X as a nickname. But we can go with Zareem as well. That's pretty good.
Do we have anything else on this game?
I don't know if we've really said enough about Jordan Poole.
Well, I mean, there's not a lot to say left because we keep seeing increments of this keep on every game. More and more comes out, and now we're getting to the point of where it's like, uh-oh, this guy's a player, and, you know, we're going to just have to enjoy it.
For hopefully two more years. All right, we're going to take a break. Come back to Penn State.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
If you get in foul trouble in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man on your bench. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one, finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
You want them, I got them. Dripping like water. You want them, I got them. Dripping like
water.
You want them, I got them.
Sticky,
dripping like water.
Snoop
you want them, I got them. Dripping like water. You want them, I got them. Dripping like water.
Goldie Lowe.
You want them, I got them. Dripping like water. You want them, I got them.
Talk to him, nephew.
The candy man. Hey,
come on, narcotic vendor, meth merchant, shipping and handling your life supply. Time to get up and wipe the eye boogers out my eye. What y'all trying to buy, Pippa? You know it's kind of dry here. I only got a couple of pies left to last me through the year. Ice cream candy. Man, that shit be coming in handy.
It's real walkie-talkie. What else? I got that from the DBs, my cousin. Ooh, work dirty. If you want it, I got to be up in the cop and be about your grip. Devour any coward, sour, slippery at the lip. Be stuck, suck up to none. Don't be no sucker. Be a block monster, be a reputable mother.
So, Penn State.
Just, if you could get into Penn State and like play your rawr instead of theirs one time, that would be excellent.
Wow. So, Penn State, for me, the story of this is they go through this month where, you know, you're not really sure if this is the same team that put the Spurs to Villanova and UNC and Purdue. And in the Penn State game, that defense comes roaring back, and there's so many Penn State possessions that just end with someone jacking some random stuff up so hard that it hits the backboard and it's really hard to rebound. You know those kind of shots?
Like a three?
Yes. Well, that one went in. That was their only make.
That was was that the entirety of their offense that game?
They also had a lot of threes hit the backboard. But and I was talking about this with a friend at work. It hit the backboard after the rim.
That's bad.
So then you have a guy on the weak side trying to rebound it with his hands up, and the ball just comes flying off the backboard. I've played enough like pickup ball at the gym where those are the most terrifying things because you're anticipating the ball hitting the rim, right, going back up, and then grabbing it, and it just kind of comes flying off, and it almost either takes out, it jams your finger, or takes you out your face, or goes off your knee. And, I mean, they got a couple of those rebounds because, like, what are you supposed to do with that?
Yeah, they needed to put, like, some speeding signs up during the week, like, please do not throw balls at the backboard so hard that they injure other players.
Please stop taking YMCA shots.
But then they did hit one.
They hit one.
They banked the three-pointer.
How many other ones did they hit?
They hit no other three-pointers.
For a grand total of 1 of 14.
And
this isn't like an unlucky one. So, you know, like teams go 1 of 14, you're like, oh, they just got unlucky.
No, they
didn't get unlucky. This was well-deserved.
No, my God. So Michigan actually spent a lot of time in this game doubling Lamar Stevens, which I thought was odd, because Stevens is like, he's all right, but like he's a guy who takes a lot of mid-range jumpers and hits an okay number, but if he's taken a bunch of shots, you're going to win that game probably. But Michigan thought that if they could devolve usage from him and put it on anybody else, that they were going to benefit, and they were right. Yeah, I mean, Luke knows what he's doing.
Look what they did to Rasheer Bolton. Their point guard was like kind of the revelation this year, at least on offense.
I mean, he's a 45% three-point shooter. He was reasonably effective inside the rim, gets the line a little bit, shoots really, really well once there. Too many turnovers, and in this, 7.
44 offensive rating in this game.
Xavier Simpson ate him alive.
Same number of turnovers as he had shot attempts.
I mean, that's bad. I just want to say that out loud. It's bad.
Yeah.
All right.
It's good for Zareem.
He hit a couple in this one, too. And then this is a Dakic game. So what happens in a Dan Dakic game is he says a bunch of stuff, and you're like, this is so annoying. And then he says something that's a really good point. And in this game, that good point was Jordan Poole is the kind of guy who's played a ton of pickup ball. And you just the naturalness with which he does weird things. Like the sinuous drive he had against IU, he had a couple of these in this game. He had that step back where the big switched on him, and he was just like, this is... And the big knew what was happening, and he knew what was happening, and it didn't matter. And so he had the behind-the-back assist
to Tuskegee.
Was it?
I think no, it was to Davis.
Was it to Davis?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, because everyone had that moment where, like, please, Davis, do not screw that one up.
And those were back-to-back possessions. And that's when he started on this thing where it's like, this is a guy who has played a lot of unstructured basketball.
Yeah.
And you can – so he heat checks, and that's part of that kind of attitude he brings. But he's really creative, and I think that as we go along here, that kind of attitude he brings and that kind of efficiency at being creative in places where a lot of people would be timid – is going to stand him in good stead.
Well, Michigan could be in some defensive slogs. I mean, we've seen them a few already, and the Penn State game was definitely one of those, and that's kind of what you need in that situation, is a guy who can be slightly unorthodox and create something.
Right, and then he can also hit fair number of terrible shots.
He can just heat up at any time, obviously.
There is a shot in the Penn State game where I'm like, that is the worst shot in the world, and it goes in. It was like an early shot clock, heavily contested NBA three. And I was like, nah! And then it went. Like, all right.
Uh-oh. Here we go.
No, it's just.
No. The 1920 suite is coming out when those things start going in.
I don't know what that is.
We were talking about his next year stuff.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well.
And we're not allowed to talk about how great Pool is because I think the cat's got it out of the bag.
Yeah. It seems that way.
Well,
the pants are off.
He's, the pants. Just gotta like get him in that range where it's clearly he should come back one more year.
So Michigan had a really good defensive game, but Mike Watkins had a nice offensive game.
It's true. I mean, you know, go back and you look at all his makes, and it's kind of like, eh.
Well, you
if he makes that, he makes that.
You're watching him take this shot, and you're like, oh, yeah, because Teske has a hand in his face, or he's botting him up, his hands
away,
are, and they're going in, and you're just like, all right, fine. You know, that's just that. But I guess I think my point is that he had a very nice offensive game, and yet Penn State's offense was still.
Well, they had 18 turnovers, and a lot of them in the first half. And they just never really had any ability to create shots. And I think that was what Michigan was thinking when they were doubling Stevens. Like, this is the only guy on their roster who can create anything for himself. So we're going to put it on the other guys and see what happens.
Yeah, and it was kind of a tale of two halves for Michigan on offense, right? The first half was...
slog.
Just, I mean, do you remember... I think you and I went to that Maryland game last year where you said to me at halftime, I wonder if they'll show all of Michigan's makes in the first half on the highlight package.
And they did.
And they did because we counted them.
Yeah.
They did the same thing again in this game. I mean, it was like 25-20 or something at halftime. You're like, well, this is...
And even so, like, it's 25-20 at halftime. It's ugly. It's stupid. But you're like, this is a five-point lead. This is probably going to be fine.
Yeah.
And it was.
And then they scored 43 in the second half. And like you said, what was it, the Air Force game you were referencing last week about how it doesn't matter when you make your shots. Like
exactly, yeah.
Every shot is worth the same, regardless minute it's in.
So it that's kind of a... Someone might say that's a stupid thing to say. But so the point is, like, just because Michigan was in a game with Air Force for a half or whatever, they won that game by 21 points.
Right.
And that's the only thing that really matters in your evaluation going forward. So the fact that Michigan was in a bit of a game with Penn State, which is a top 50 KenPom team.
Especially defensively.
Well, they're top 25. And,
right.
So the fact that was an ugly slog in the first half, it doesn't really concern me because it's like, okay, we'll average that over the whole game.
Yeah.
And they still performed at a level that, you know, Michigan is operating with KenPom number 4 expectations now. So, like, just because they're getting to the KenPom line and not greatly exceeding it, that's not like Michigan's ranked 25th, they're ranked 34th. We need to exceed those expectations to expect Michigan to be a national contender. Those are the kind of expectations placed upon a national contender that Michigan is still meeting. So it's a different like feel for like, oh, the KenPom line was this and we did this.
Also, they haven't lost yet.
Well, I'm just saying.
So like our nervous for us is like, oh no, we're in a slog with Penn State. And then like immediately out of the half, they come out with a 9-0 run and okay, this one's pretty much over.
And the thing about that 9-0 run is it was like mostly open court turnovers that turned into transition points. And to Michigan isn't like a huge, heavy pressure defense that's going to go get you transition buckets all the time. But man, they turned it on when they needed it to like really put some distance between themselves and Penn State.
I think that was the December lull. Was they didn't really do a lot of help defense, and I think that they just kind of they tried to man up, and it's Air Force, it's whoever else they're playing, and it's like, oh, okay, whatever. Penn State comes to town, now turn it back on again, and they know that Penn State does not have a real point guard or a guy who can really distribute well, and
that's something that. Like kind of the bottom half of the Big Ten has to deal with.
I was going
to
say, that looks like sounds like good preparation for the rest of the Big Ten.
Like Northwestern, even Ohio State, I don't think much of C.J. Jackson. I don't think he's really a point guard. But like Winston's obviously a point guard, but I don't think Wisconsin has a point guard. They have a point center.
Well, they have a National Player of the Year candidate.
Right. But like, so the thing about what Michigan presents is, okay, you can shut down Hap, and then Wisconsin's dead in the water, and they lose to Western Kentucky.
Like, and then they also did it again to somebody
Minnesota.
This past weekend. Right.
They had 14 points at halftime because Minnesota wasn't doubling off Hap. So if Michigan can do that against Wisconsin, I think they can win against Wisconsin. Then it's just like, all right, well, who's the other contender in this conference? Well, it's Michigan State. and they're a good team. But, you know, Teske versus Ward seems like a pretty good matchup to me. And we saw what happened when Xavier played Winston last year. So, like, you know, I feel like pretty good.
Yeah,
well, it's going to be because, like, you look at the offense that Michigan generated against North Carolina, Villanova, Purdue, and then more so the first half of the Indiana game. But, like, they've played really well in those big games. And it's like they've kind of needed their shots to go in, so to speak, or to hit a lot of their open looks. And they have when those big-name teams have come to town.
I mean, Michigan State's going to be different because they're going to be able to shoot the ball. And the way Michigan State has played all year is when they get into a game, it's because their shots aren't falling in the first half.
Well, they're also
they fall.
A heavily transition-based team there. I think they're in top 10 on hoop math in terms of shots that go up in the first 10 seconds of the shot clock. So Michigan has already played a team like that in North Carolina. They had to sacrifice all their offensive boards to deal with that. So, I mean, but, you know, getting them in the half court and getting them against your half court defense might be worth that. So,
and well, I mean, they're also not like a murderous offensive board team, right? Like they get some, but it's not like they're
but
the Thunder from a few years ago or something.
So the thing about these two games is Michigan's 4-0. They've picked it up from that kind of lull, and now they're one game away from matching last 2013's 16-0 start.
Oh yeah. And they got Illinois, and then home for Northwestern.
Home for Northwestern, so it's likely that they are probably going to break it. And then
I hope so.
Yeah, both of those would be pretty disappointing losses if they were to happen. And then they go to Indiana, and then
that'll be interesting because this game started so terribly for Indiana, getting two fouls on Morgan and Langford, but then Michigan also didn't have Livers. So if they get Livers back, that's a different piece that, you know, now Johns has some run, but Livers is a different guy on the offense that they can bring in. Like you said, he matches up well against Morgan in terms of height and stuff. So, and then on the offensive side, he shoots as well as probably almost anyone on the team.
Well, and Indiana was missing Finnessy, but like,
well, that's
true.
Finnessy and Deron Davis.
Yeah. Well, their backup point guard was fine, though. Like, the Devontae Green's
hit a couple of those, like, mid-range, just like, all right, you can have that shots. Like, there was one really early where he was trying to get a foul call.
And he kind of went up and flailed.
Went in. I was like, come on. But, you know, it'll happen.
Clearly, there's not that much to talk about with Penn State as we are back to the Indiana game.
All right. We're going to take a break, come back, talk some Michigan-Notre Dame hockey.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Is your online store sluggish, outdated, underperforming? You may be suffering from chronic crappy website disorder. One in three online stores built by your brother's friend's nephew currently suffers from chronic crappy website. But now, there's hope. Introducing Human Element. Huel has helped hundreds suffering from CCW to turn their online stores around, creating fast, secure, and engaging online experiences that turn visitors into customers and put products back at the top of their search engine game.
Before Huel, I had abandoned carts, browser errors, and poorly animated GIFs. Now, with Huel, I can focus on what I'm actually good at, running my business.
Jeffrey, would you be a deer and pull the Ferrari around?
Side effects may include increased traffic, customer conversions, better ROI, compliments, elation, and early retirement. Why live with the disappointment of chronic crappy website disorder? Speak to your Human Element consultant today to see if Huel is right for you.
This is a song about my squid. I've got a squid and I really like him. I love his beak and his bendy legs. I've got a squid and his name is Ian, and he suckers onto elephants and lays his eggs. I inflate his head with heliums, float off into the sky, me and Ian the squid balloon, waving as we're sailing by. I've got a squid and I really like him. I love the way that he can travel through time. I've got a squid and his name is Ian, and me and Ian are feeling.
Apparently, it's Star Wars weekend for Michigan sports, as it's Star Wars day at Chrysler, but yesterday in South Bend, Michigan's hockey team came out dressed as stormtroopers.
Yeah, but they shot straight.
they shot from distance.
They did.
A shot that maybe only Jordan Poole makes.
That was, I'm willing to say, the longest goal non-empty net variety in Michigan history. So Ciccone flips it up and you can see the wind grab it. Like, there's definitely a point where the puck's like, I'm gonna turn left now, and that still shouldn't be a goal, but the goalie, I don't know if he lost
Morris
it.
Had to have lost it, right?
Well, like, I feel like Cale Morris owed us one
or 12,
like, because last year he straight up stole two games from Michigan about this time of year. Like, they played really, really well against the then number one Notre Dame team.
Yeah.
And Morris just shut the door. So, like, he had to give one back. And that actually turned out to be basically the winning margin, because Michigan wins 4-2, but with an empty netter. So that was the difference between Michigan winning and yet another tie.
Gosh.
Which, you know, at some point I'm kind of like, I don't know if I'm rooting for this. If they get eliminated from tourney consideration, then I guess that will be the moment.
Just tie all the games, make it as unresolved as possible. They also had another goal that, like, I thought was, it was a nice goal, but I wasn't sure.
Which one?
The Moyle goal.
I mean, so the puck,
did he even get his head around before he shot it? Like, I couldn't.
Yeah, he was definitely. So the weird thing about that one is, it was on edge.
Yeah.
So, and it goes like crossbar down.
Right.
From that,
it literally hit the crossbar and went down and in.
Yeah, and so, like, I felt like that was due to the puck being on edge, and that was the reason it could get up that high from so tightly and close.
If you look at the replay, though, Morris, again, I don't even think he saw that, because he does not move or react in any way until the puck is in the back of the
net.
Yeah,
but, like, from that range, like, you're going to...
But you should be able to see where the puck is.
I know, but,
think.
Like, no goalie is going to get a crossbar down short shot from that range.
Yeah, sure, but, I mean, he didn't even try, is my point. So he probably didn't even see it.
I didn't believe it myself.
More than the Ciccone goal.
So, two things. One, outdoor games are kind of over.
Yeah, well, nobody really went to this one.
It was like 25,000.
23
was what they announced. And that was, like, embarrassing, because it's a 80,000 person.
Especially after, I mean, I watched a little bit of the Bruins and Blackhawks. I flipped through it a little bit, and there were a lot of people there.
Well, I mean, they're like doing the GLI outside and stuff like this, and just like, I don't, like, it's fun as a stunt, but
yeah,
it's not a good environment to watch a hockey game.
Well, like you said, if indeed the wind took that puck, like, that's not...
Or, like, they can't see.
Like, because of the lighting. Right. And, like, they played it during, like, the dusk, essentially.
They pushed it back because it was too warm.
But that's what I mean. Like, those types of things come into play It'd be like playing almost basketball with like a chance of rain or fog or something.
It was beautiful when it started. It was that snow game in Buffalo. It was beautiful on television.
The first ever
was an outdoor at Rich Stadium.
Winter Classic?
No, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, the first Winter Classic. Look, Michigan State played one when I was in college.
Well, that's true.
That was the first one.
Okay. Yeah, that one I don't remember very well, even though I was at, because I was in college.
Well, shame.
We were sitting.
But it was also, guess what, a tie.
Yeah, we were sitting very high, and it was really cold. Was
right, so
brutal.
Could you even see?
I mean, we saw better there than I saw when we went to the one at Michigan Stadium. We sat low for that one, and you couldn't even see over the board.
The smart thing they did is they gave the hockey season ticket holders, like, the primo seats, which were, like, about 30 rows up on the blue line. And even those were, like, it's just not worth it. Like, I would do, like, a big chill every decade. That would be my limit. Like Dave Brandon moving one Michigan State game to frickin' Chicago like an idiot.
And nobody
went to the Ohio State Michigan game in Cleveland.
They also had to delay that one because of like warmth or some rain or something.
It just feels like it's reached the point of like basketball on aircraft carriers.
Well, right, and I feel like it's almost like they're trying to bring it back. I mean, I guess this worked out because the NHL put a game at Notre Dame Stadium for the Blackhawks worked.
That's probably going to happen annually where
college teams, you might as well play more than one game when you do go through all that trouble.
Yeah, there's going to be a piggyback event.
Sure.
Yeah, the fan experience of those things is not good.
It sucks.
The best you can get is like the first Winter Classic where it's just beautiful on television.
Right.
And everyone who goes to the game suffers through it so they can say they were there.
And I've done that, and I'm done with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't even know if I'd go to Michigan State again for an outdoor game. The only one I would go to is if it was here, and that's because I live in Ann Arbor.
Well, yeah. I mean,
I guess Demers took his kids, and like that would be like the exception.
But yeah, it's also a day for a road trip, and it's Saturday.
Yeah, the people who went actually said they had a lot of fun tailgating. I talked to Demers on the way here. He said like they had a great time tailgating.
It was like 50 degrees and sunny
in January.
And also like it's not like football where like half of tailgating is sitting there in your head nervous about the game that's about to happen. Like it was just a relaxing, fun time.
The other thing. This is the first Michigan hockey game I've watched on television all year. I didn't watch the GLI. I was like, okay.
Wasn't on television.
I got to turn on the GLI, and I was like, oh, it wants me to pay $12.50 a month for something that has like four Michigan hockey
games. And we've spent segments on the Hockey Cast talking about this because we're trying to watch these games and talk about them, and we can't. And the only way to do it is to charge you like $30 a month. And I looked at Anthony, and I was like, yeah, you think Brian's doing that? And he just laughed.
It's embarrassing. Because like I know the quality of that broadcast is going to be garbage.
Because
I've done it before, and it's like I can't even see the puck. Like, you know, Big Ten to go, it's like, all right, well, it pauses for 3 seconds, and then someone scored a goal. Oops. And then even when it's going, it's like a press box shot with some guy, and there's no audio. Or
it's student audio. Or
it's
something.
Student audio. It's like
the point of the Big Ten, the reason that it was so cool that we were going to have a Big Ten hockey conference was that we were going to get – Big Ten Network to be carrying the games.
And now the situation is worse than ever.
Yeah.
Like 10 years ago, Michigan had, I'd say, 60% of their games televised in some capacity.
Or more, especially once you got to conference.
I mean, they're having some road games televised in the second half of the year. But this is probably Ward Manuel's biggest failing so far. Because, like,
is just not standing up and being like, this is one of our big sports. Well, it needs to be visible.
So Notre Dame has a deal with NBC.
Yeah.
So they get 12 games or something a year on NBC Sports.
And they have a good streaming setup through NBC Live Extra that, like, when they have home games or they can also do that.
And then Minnesota has a deal with Fox Sports North. All their games are televised.
Right.
Which is why you get to see all the Minnesota games on Fox Sports Plus.
Right.
So Michigan is probably going to have to spend some money to do this because, like, you know, college hockey isn't the biggest thing in the world.
No.
But Fox Sports Detroit, I mean, they're carrying the Pistons, they're carrying the Red Wings right now.
Yeah,
but
there's
like,
FS Plus exists. Fox Sports 2 exists.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen cornhole on television.
You know, when you first said that, I thought you were joking, and then I was like, you know what? He probably isn't.
I am not joking. Cornhole is now televised.
I mean, they used to televise dominoes.
I saw Magic the Gathering on ESPN2 once.
I don't even know what that is.
It's a card game.
Have you seen Cones of Dunshire?
It's basically like that, except with cards.
Okay.
You really don't know what Magic the Gathering is?
You didn't go to high school.
Does that sound like that? Yeah. I went straight from 8th grade to Michigan.
Oh. Anyway, so it's like I'm watching this game, and it's in a lovely HD. I can see the puck. I know what's happening. There are professional broadcasters professionally broadcasting, and I'm like, this is so nice. I enjoy this.
Yeah.
And
we used to get together to watch Michigan road games. Do you remember? Like, they'd go to Miami, and we'd all get together and do that or something.
TV.
And now it's basically maybe BTN Plus.
Yeah, I'm not going back to 1984, and it's like the hockey game's on TV. I can tell when people lift their arms because they scored. Hooray. So, I mean, just in terms of return on investment.
Yeah.
Getting Michigan's hockey games on television somewhere, even if you have to buy the time and sell the ads yourself with IMG, like, you're recruiting people from British Columbia.
I'll sell the ads. Or I'm sure Lending like will advertise
Toronto
will sponsor this
or
thing.
California or Texas.
Got to be making more money than you're getting from like the number of people who will pay $35 for three games.
And if you can tell people, your kid's going to be on TV, you're going to be able to watch every one of his games. Now that's something that I think will move the needle with people. I don't know, man.
We should probably get to talking about the actual game.
The actual game. All right, let's talk about the actual
game. So I did look at like the Corsi, and it was pretty easy, even. College Hockey News, I think, had it like as a 1-1 differential, and I had like 3 or something.
That was interesting because they outshot them in actual shots by a considerable margin.
Right.
I guess until late. They had like 3 minutes of...
They didn't have many power plays. They had kind of 1.5 power plays. Notre Dame had, I think, 2.5 or 3.5 power plays.
In the third, they started off with 2 early in the third, and they had a 6-on-4 late.
Well, yeah. They
had like 2 or 3 minutes of... No extra attacker time.
Right. But kind of the point that I was going to with this is it was similar, I thought, and Anthony and I were talking about this, but to the early game, the first game against Notre Dame on the Friday, when Michigan's up kind of 2-1 or for a lot of that game, and then the third period rolls around, Notre Dame has to get back in it, and Michigan just shuts the door and locks it. And they get like maybe 3 attempts on net or something the entire, or 3 shots or something. It was something really absurdly low, and Michigan just shut them down, took the puck away, and Notre Dame couldn't do anything. It wasn't quite like that, but Notre Dame was having trouble getting the puck in. They certainly couldn't really get near the house. Like, everything was from the edge, and Michigan didn't really have the offensive firepower to go back to the other end and really control the puck in that end.
No, it kind of says something when like, my takeaway from that game is like, ooh, the Van Wy Raby line played really well. Which they did.
And Moyle. Don't forget Moyle. He had his second goal. And that's something that Anthony and I have talked about a little bit too, is like, you know, Moyle and Randall are finally getting some more skating time. These are 2 18-year-olds. A lot of Michigan's like freshmen are 20, so these guys might have a little more of an upside jump. And Moyle's put the puck in the net a couple times in the last few games. Randall's gotten some run, and like that's kind of, I think, where you're gonna have to go. They'll get Hughes and Norris back, as obviously they were gone at the WJC and almost came so close to winning a gold medal. But you know, they played well without them. They played I hate when people talk about this, but they almost played like a team. But it was similar to when remember when Hunwick came in for his first game, and the team just was like, "Uh-oh," and we all better play defense.
Yes.
It's kind of like that. They couldn't really get the puck in the zone. Their neutral zone defense was pretty good, that type of thing. And
wasn't that what this team is supposed to be at the beginning of the year?
I mean, that's what we talked about. We looked at them and like
a bunch of great defenders who've been around for a while, and
that's
a second season under Mel Pearson.
That's like, what they were hoping to be.
This is what you're hoping to be, but that's what they needed to be. Because they did not have the elite goal scoring up front, other than maybe a guy or so on the top line, and they needed to have decent goaltending and protect the net really well, not allow good shots.
And I wonder how much of this is just the fact that they're getting at least like replacement level goaltending, because their goaltending early in the season was abominable. And, you know, you're listening to the coach's show, and Bell's trying not to throw anyone under the bus. But he's also saying, we need to defend a lot better from the net out.
Yeah.
And he kind of repeated that, and I was like, okay, I think I know what Mel thinks.
you workshopped that one, Mel.
I just like I think I can read between the lines, like having an 8:30 or whatever is like that's bad. I think that's bad.
So they got the gift goals early, so to speak, and they went Lockwood. I thought made a nice move to get out of the zone and create
space.
That
wasn't a gift. That was a legit.
That goal. One I'm not calling that one a gift. That one I was saying was legit. He had made a nice move. The other ones were a little.
The Moyle one is just, it's a little bit lucky, but it's not a gift.
Okay. The point is that they're up 3-0 before
10 minutes
the game really started, and all of a sudden now you can go into that, if we play good defense and we don't get caught in odd man rushes and we can get the puck out of our zone, we're in really good shape as long as we don't take a bunch of penalties. And they did, and that's essentially the rest of the way the game played out.
The other guy who kind of popped out to me was Nick Blankenberg.
Yes.
Who made a couple of plays in the zone that, like, if you had told me that was Quinn Hughes, I would have been like, plausible. Not that he's Quinn Hughes, but, I mean, they've been playing on his off hand the whole season.
Okay.
And I think that says something. Like, he's a true freshman. He's actually a guy who converted from forward to defense halfway through his junior career. Hmm. And he's super skilled on the puck. He's going to be Chad Langless. And I think he's got some more upside left to explore just because of that. But he had some explosive skating. He's a really good guy with the puck on his stick. And, you know, Hughes is going to be gone next year. They're bringing in Cam York.
Well,
I would not be super surprised to see Blankenberg paired with York.
Well, no. I mean, those are going to be their top two returning defensemen because their other two defensemen are, two of them are seniors. Like, Ciccone's gone. And Boca's gone. And Hughes is gone. So now it's like Luke Martin and Blankenberg, and then, you know, like you said, Cam York is going to come in. So that's four guys that have, at least have experience in York. And like you said, but that's just something else towards like the defensive side of things where, and this was the other thing I realized, like with that win yesterday, they're like 24th in pairwise. And it's kind
they're
of.
They're on the bubble?
No, the bubble is.
The bubble's probably like 15. 18, 15, yeah. Inside of 20. And that's why, like, they have a. We've seen everyone except for Ohio State. And they got to go to Ohio State this weekend. Ohio State's the top team, so don't get me wrong. But if they get a result this weekend and they go 1-2 down there, which I haven't gotten a result against that team in a while, but if they can get something, I mean, they're probably around 20 inside of that. They can play with everyone else. We've seen it. You know, I don't think this team is particularly great, but they're also not out of it. And if, like I said, the defense plays the way it does, we've seen it a few times against good teams, they can make a run.
The good thing about Michigan's completely goofy scheduling is that they only have a few home games the rest of the year, and pairwise, especially the RPI, favors road games.
Right.
And I think they do it excessively. Like, there's not really much of a home-road split in the NHL. And if there is one in college hockey, I think it's mostly because of non-conference scheduling. Mm-hmm. So they'll have an opportunity to climb up pretty more rapidly than they would if they had a bunch of home games.
And they did that last year when they went and swept Minnesota on the road.
Right, and that changed.
Not that they will this year, but they'll have that chance.
Right, but and that changed their outlook from, like, this could happen to this is probably going to happen. And we'll see how it goes.
I mean, on the other hand, like, it's two games at Ohio State. They got to play again at Penn State.
No, they already went to Penn State. They host Penn State.
Oh, that's right. So they have to go to – and so the other guys I want to point out, Minnesota and Wisconsin are two teams that have been, like, getting better as the season progresses.
Yeah, but, you know, I gotta get dubs if you're
going to make – Yeah, so in other words, what you're saying is there have been too many ties?
That's the other thing. Like, good God.
They've set a record. I think a program record for ties in a year.
I think they're tied right now.
Oh, okay. Well, of course.
But we get a lot of 3-on-3 hockey.
Ugh. You guys love it. I
don't love it. It doesn't matter to me because it doesn't matter. Yeah.
It matters, I guess, in conference. But
I brought this up when, you know, there's the Blades of Glory thing that they reference in Lawyers in Paris, where they like, what does it mean? Like, I don't know what it means, but it gets the people going. Like, that's 3-on-3 hockey.
See, I know that. From like a Jay-Z song, but
that's the I just reference that song.
Okay,
but it's also from a movie.
I see.
I'm one of those people who get.
Haven't you ever watched the video?
I'm just getting going.
If you're looking for a mortgage and you're a Michigan fan, there's only one place to go: Homeshore Lending. Fair and honest, Homeshore Lending is local, efficient, and small enough that you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest. Matt Bleeds Maize and Blue, and so does his family.
Hi, this is Matt Demarest, owner of Homesure Lending. We're a local mortgage company based here in Ann Arbor on State Street, but we serve the entire state of Michigan, helping people buy or refinance their homes. We care about doing things the right way and treating people the right way, but we also care deeply about the Wolverines, and I wanted to introduce you to a couple of the biggest Michigan fans I know.
Hi, I'm Cooper, I'm 10.
I'm Colby, and I'm 8.
Who's the best team in the whole country?
Homesure Lending at 2723 South State Street in Ann Arbor. For more info, go to homesurelending.com. That's HOMESURELENDING.com. Or call Matt at 734-531-9950. Homesure Lending. NMLS number 1161358. Equal housing lender.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Me, so now of a single fire line, possessed by early morning dew. In rays of light that shine through the tops of trees, the teacher's heard us torn to the bus with hands like dried up leaves. Not like the green so high above and below. Now I am an airplane, am an airplane. Ooh.
We welcome in Alex Cook of, I guess it's MGO Blog. How you doing, Alex?
Doing pretty well, just enjoying this undefeated season.
So we're going to talk to you kind of semi-regularly about happenings in the Big Ten. It's obviously a little bit too much to go over every single game like we do with Jamie because people are playing twice a week. But maybe some takeaways from the first week of Big Ten play in the new year. The first thing that kind of comes to mind is that Michigan State and Ohio State had a thus far kind of rare battle between teams at the top of the league that Michigan State came out on top of.
Yeah, and I think Michigan State really proved with this past week. They didn't have Josh Langford. He was out with an injury, but they kind of proved that they are right up there with Michigan on top of the league. Both of those teams are the only teams that are still undefeated in Big Ten play. And kind of before the season, everybody assumed that Michigan and Michigan State in some order would be the top two, and I think that's played out, even though the league has been better than expected, just because Michigan and Michigan State have exceeded expectations. And with the win over Ohio State, Michigan State really showed their elite offense, which is currently third nationally in Kempom. And yeah, the Spartans are a tough team and came up with a huge road win that probably will wind up mattering towards the end of the season as we determine the Big Ten champion.
So, I mean, one thing that kind of struck me as I was watching the second half of this game is that I didn't know how Ohio State was ever going to generate offense. And, you know, this is not a vintage Michigan State defense. They've got a couple of decent pieces, but Winston's a little bit of a hole. Ward isn't a real shot blocker. But they were very organized. And like, Chris Holtmann did a really good job with Ohio State last year, doing a good job with them this year. But they just kind of feel like, who's the NBA player on their roster? I don't think there is one, or even a close one. So
no, I completely agree. I think Caleb Wesson has been pretty impressive, the sophomore center. Kind of a big body. He started to hit the pick and pop even a little bit on the threes. He scored 25 points against Michigan State. But other than Wesson, like you said, there's not really a guy. They brought in a Wake Forest grad transfer. He hasn't been particularly great. They have a couple of promising young players, but nobody that really can make much of an impact. And like you said, Holtmann's done a great job, and I think he'll have them overachieving most years, including this one. But I don't really see them kind of challenging Michigan or Michigan State and trying to make a run at the conference title this year, just with the, personnel they have.
On the other hand, they did have a really good adjustment in the first half of that game to shut down Michigan State's ability to run. So they were really checking Winston off of any turnover, rebound, or made basket to prevent that initial pass and then run up the court. So that was able to keep Michigan State kind of contained for the first half, but then Michigan State was able to adjust.
Yeah, and it really came down to the last couple minutes of the game. I believe it was tied with 5 minutes left, and then Michigan State's defense really picked it up. Ohio State didn't score for 4 minutes and wound up being a pretty comfortable margin for them.
So, I mean, Michigan and Michigan State are obviously the class of the league, but let's take it down a tier, who's maybe making more of a name for themselves kind of in the we are probably or might going to make the NCAA's tier.
I think Maryland has done a great job. They did not have much of a non-conference schedule to speak of, but they do have plenty of chances at quality wins to open up Big Ten play. And they've beaten Penn State kind of in the early set. They lost a tough one on the road to Purdue, but then they took care of Nebraska at home this week, and that was a big win. They had some plays by Jalen Smith late in the game, including the game winner.
Yeah, that was right down to the wire.
Yeah, that was a 50-50 game, and those are the kind of games Maryland's going to need to win to make it back into the NCAA tournament. So I think that they've been more impressive than expected. I think Minnesota, they went on the road and beat Wisconsin, which is an impressive win. And also beat Nebraska as well. So those two teams, I think, have kind of exceeded expectations a little bit.
I mean, Minnesota, that game, Wisconsin had 14 points at halftime. It was unbelievable.
It's crazy. Michigan and Penn State actually had played earlier in that evening and had a pretty ugly first half. But Minnesota and Wisconsin definitely out Big Ten them in that one.
They did. And kind of the thing that jumped out to me is they have Jordan Murphy, they have the freshman Oturu, and they also have a guy named Matt Stockman who's a 7-footer, and they were kind of taking the approach that Michigan did last year where they're not going to double Hap and they're just going to cover up the 3-point shooters, and whatever Hap does, Hap does, and they really struggled to generate shots as a result of that.
Yeah, I think Minnesota definitely impressed me in that game. Like you said, they kind of took away everybody else, let Hap get his a little bit, which is the best strategy against Minnesota, I think. Minnesota, with Amir Coffey, he's kind of playing in almost – so Minnesota, like most Big Ten teams, kind of has a little bit of issues at point guard. Isaiah Washington's been really inefficient this year, even though he's had plenty of assists.
Surprise.
Yeah, big surprise there. He's still throwing up those tough shots, and who knows, maybe he'll make them against Michigan.
He definitely will. God, that game last year was so terrible. It was the most infuriating thing in the world.
I watched that with Adam at Founders in Grand Rapids, and we were kind of just sitting there being like, okay, so when are they going to put Minnesota away? But anyways, Coffee's been great for them this year. He's 6'8". He kind of is almost a lead guard for them, kind of like a Ben Simmons or Kyle Anderson type, just really, really big, can see the floor well, good passer. And that adjustment, I think, has been good for Minnesota. You never know with Rick Pitino or Richard Pitino how well they'll actually do, but I think early on I've been pretty impressed with them, the wins they put together so far in the Big Ten.
And Wisconsin's kind of shown a couple cracks here, and both in this game against Minnesota. They lose to Western Kentucky. They are currently annihilating Penn State, but that's just kind of a situation where, you know, they were kind of thought as a contender, and now it kind of seems like they might be solidly in tier two instead of tier one.
Yep, I would agree with that for sure. I think just beyond Happ, Demetri Tice has been pretty good, but they just don't really have the role players, I think, to challenge a Michigan or a Michigan State.
And then Iowa kind of comes off a really deflating loss to Michigan State, and they beat Nebraska in a game that neither of us can really comment on because we haven't seen it yet, but it's...
I was watching that. It was a good game.
They needed that. And so that's one, an interesting thing about this Big Ten is this is game four. And a lot of teams, it's like, we need this game. Like, Michigan needed to beat Indiana to keep pace with Michigan State. Ohio State needed the game against Michigan State to maybe challenge for the title. And then down at the bottom in, like, the 6 to 10 range, like, these teams are scrapping for bids. And every game, it's like, we need this one because there's no let-up down the road.
Well, I was in their home court on this one and actually was trying to play defense a lot better than they normally do, and that's been Iowa's thing all year anyway. They're not great at defense, but when they really try to lock down, they're just good enough that their offense can carry them.
I caught glimpses of that one in the second half, and it looked like Iowa's 2-3 and Nebraska's 1-3-1. They were kind of going playing zone against each other. The score wound up being 93-84, so I don't know how much defense.
Not a lot of defense.
Yeah.
Emphasis on just enough. We're not talking Michigan or Penn State even levels of D here.
I mean, Iowa's interesting because, like, there are teams that can drag you down into a slugfest that's just going to be grim and ugly. Iowa can drag you up into a ridiculous no-defense game.
And I think the thing with Iowa that's going to be tough for them, especially as they play on the road, is every offense has droughts or, you know, sequences of possessions where they don't play particularly well. And if Iowa goes cold, then usually the defense falls off too. And when it's an already bad defense, things can kind of snowball a bit. I know that that's how it kind of went down at Purdue. But yeah, Iowa and Nebraska each 1-3 in the Big Ten. And it's like, okay, if you're going to contend for the top four, like you said, there's already a bit of urgency, even though it's still early January.
Any other takes that we have not gotten to you for?
Any other takes?
Takes.
I'm not really sure.
Takes.
Yeah. Illinois is really terrible. So that's a take that I
have. That's relevant for Michigan now, right?
Yeah, not going too far out on a limb on that one. And, yeah, I don't know about Brad Underwood, man. It's just, I don't really see it. I don't really see it with Illinois.
He had such a good team. That Oklahoma State team we played was so good.
Well, that game was phenomenal, right? I mean, they didn't play a whole lot of defense either.
Well, I mean, they were kind of like Michigan, but they were up-tempo. The thing about Underwood right now is that, like, he doesn't have any posts, and half his team left.
Yeah.
And, like, if that's his fault, then, yeah, he's screwed. But if it's John Grosch's fault for kind of running a country club, then, like, maybe he'll be fine.
They are back above. Oh, sorry, you interrupted.
I think the point on that one would be that two of the players that left, including their starting center for parts of last year, were players that Underwood recruited that left. And the other thing, too, is just their entire defensive scheme makes no sense to me. I mean, they try to heat teams up and force turnovers on the perimeter, which they do a lot of. They hack the crap out of teams more than pretty much anybody in the country. And even though, yeah, they're able to generate some turnovers and cause a little bit of chaos, just the math doesn't work out, and they wind up giving up like 1.1, 1.2 points per possession pretty consistently. So I think Illinois is firmly on the Rutgers tier and might actually pass Rutgers to become
the worst 10 spots
team.
Ahead of Rutgers and KenPom.
See, even
they're
that,
back above.
Even Rutgers, Illinois is important because who's going to be last in the league in KenPom? You never know. Yeah.
This sounds like an MGO podcast.
This might be the first time that Rutgers doesn't finish last, so keep an eye on Illinois for that one. And then Michigan's next opponent after Illinois is Northwestern, and Northwestern needed an A.J. Turner game winner off an offensive rebound late in the game against Illinois today to beat them at home. So Northwestern, they actually also got smoked by Michigan State earlier this week without Langford. So Michigan, over the next 2 weeks, really, Illinois on Thursday, Northwestern next weekend, and then a week off, and then Wisconsin the weekend after that. Could be that Michigan is the last undefeated team in the country. Who knows?
Yeah, Nevada going down by 40 was not something that seemed like it was in the cards, but there you go. And try to remember that when Michigan does lose a game. Like, yeah, that basketball's weird. Stuff happens.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. This is David Nasternak along with Brian Cook and Seth Fisher. Which character from Star Wars would you like to see Brian dress up as? Chewbacca or Admiral Akbar?
It's a trap!
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
Squid. 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 Squid.
He got into my head
with
a D. I got into my head
with a D.
All these, like, basketballs bouncing lowly down the court.
It's in my head that
with
way.
With a D and tentacles.